This is part two of David's conversation with William Hammerstein, originally recorded in December of 2013.
You said that at a certain point, just a matter of years ago, the elders of the family, as it were, decided that it was time.
Yes.
Time to sell the catalog. You know, other than what I'm going to guess is the obvious, is that some money can be made. Was there anything else behind that decision?
Yeah, I think it was less about that, and it was more about fractional control. When Oscar's alive, you got one guy, you know, who's in charge. Mm-hmm. So you get to the next generation down. Now you've got four branches of interested family, you know, who might vie for control, or it invites discord.
Right.
When there is no logical heir to the cockpit. Mm-hmm. And so there was concern about that, and that, you know, and that then was the time, you know, that would be the right time just to spare the family all of that wrangling,
right?
Potential wrangling, and they sold it.
Uh-huh.
So that's just how it went down. That was emotionally, that was a bummer.
Yeah, that's it, because you mentioned before we started recording about you had sort of hinted that. Why was it a bummer emotionally?
It was a bummer. Because I take a lot of pride in my grandfather's contribution. You know, I'm proud of it. You know, when I see one of his shows or hear one of his songs or see a movie, it means something to me.
Mm-hmm.
It means a lot. And in the olden days, you know, when we owned the rights, you know, let's say a revival, you know, on Broadway or in the West End in London, you know, mm-hmm. there would be build up. Okay, ooh, they're gonna do a, you know, a first class show, and you know, Trevor Nunn is directing it, or Hugh Jackman is playing Curly, or the fact that there was money in the game. That you know, if it did well, we would get bigger checks for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It made it more exciting, in a way, in the same way that, you know, playing a card game, you know, playing gin rummy, it's fun, it's nice,
right?
But playing poker for money, that's a thrill. You know, when there's something at stake.
Right.
You know, there's just that extra thrill, and you can't manufacture that. So that was cool. But it was also the fear of somebody else is going to be making decisions, you know, when requests come in.
Sure.
You know, to use the material in such and such a way, you know, from a psychological point of view, like we Hammersteins will naturally, just genetically, psychologically, you know, feel more protective than someone who, you know, who may even do their honest best
mm-hmm.
to protect the integrity of the work. But they won't be able to manufacture the same motivation that we would naturally have to
uh-huh.
protect work, and that person would be more inclined to cheapen it and go for the quick buck.
Understood. You know, do you have any views? I mean, I think if you were talking to a copyright revisionist right now, you know, one of the complaints, of course, is that copyrights last too long.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people who agree with that. Even many copyright proponents agree with that. Where the date belongs is subject to discussion. But I mean, you know, other than the obvious, which is, you know, obviously being born into this family with this legacy is beneficial to you on some level. You know, do you have a view on, you know, what would you say to somebody who says, well, you know, at this point, your grandfather's work should just be public domain, right. You know, and that's where it belongs, and it's not really yours anymore.
Yeah. I guess I do. I look at it, and I, you know, maybe there is some self-interest, but I don't feel like I'm speaking out of pure self-interest. But from a preservation point of view, I think there is a preservation interest in keeping the rights in folk who will best preserve work. And you know, one thing I learned from my dad, one of the few, I mean, it's funny. I mean, he sat me down, you know, one day, and he said, we could make a quick buck. We get offers from feminine hygiene products and underarm deodorant and entities that would not serve the property well. You know, you don't want to kill the goose, you know, the golden eggs. And if people start, you know, if you license a song to a company, you know, to some product that will cheapen the song, you devalue the song itself. You devalue the show. And so, I mean, there's a financial benefit, certainly, in saving the goose that lays the golden egg. Gold is so valuable. But it's just as true for the integrity of the music. You protect the integrity. You protect. You're going to protect the value at the same time. And protecting the integrity of the art, to me, is the most important. Just like preserving Grand Central Station or a national park. Hey, national park, I'm going to go put a billboard up on the side of your Grand Canyon. It's going to be huge because I know how to make a lot of money with a big, huge billboard advertisement on this place where everybody goes, you know, before you know it, you know, who's going to the Grand Canyon? It's a graveyard of billboards, you know, and so that's, you know, I look at it from a preservationist point of view. To me, it's reasonable to extend those copyrights.
You know, Will, you raise an interesting comparison. It's particularly interesting because I know you to be an environmental lawyer and an environmentalist. And, you know, when you compare the idea of keeping works like your grandfather's intact, as it were, and to say keeping a national park from being overrun with billboards. It's an interesting comparison because I think that particularly in the digital age, you know, exclusively because of the digital age and because of the internet, I think that there seems to be this notion that, you know, when we call something, quote, public domain, you know, right. that people want to use sort of very emotional language to talk about, well, Oscar Hammerstein's work is the sound of America, and it's the voice of America, and it belongs to all of us, and it's a part of our souls. And this is all true.
Yes.
I think, however, in the same way that what you're saying about the Grand Canyon, also a national treasure, like your grandfather's work is a national treasure, that there is a point at which you can cross a line, and there's a difference between saying it sort of kind of belongs to us on an emotional level and belongs to us in a literal sense, such that anybody can do anything he or she wishes with it.
Yeah.
There's where you start to cross the line of cheapening something.
Yeah,
potentially.
Yeah. Well, let's look at it this way. Would the Grand Canyon be a part of our souls if they had put up all these billboards before it had a chance to get into our souls?
No.
You know, would we value it the same way if it had not been preserved? I don't think so.
Right. Right. And by the same token, you know, I think that the sort of the argument that tries to get made is, you know, if some kid in wherever wants to take a song from South Pacific and do a remix of it on YouTube, that's a good thing. It's good for culture. It keeps it alive. And my inclination is to say, well, maybe.
Right.
It really does depend. And there's no control. If you cede the control absolutely, then you just cede it. It's at that point, it's like, well, what if they take Bally High and turn it into some racist screed that then Google advertises, you know, Gillette razors against? Have we really actually preserved anything?
Yeah. I mean, see, and it's not like the copyright holders in the, you know, in what I know, you know, with Rodgers and Hammerstein, it's not like they have never taken any chances.
Mm.
You know, they do, you know, particularly with shows that, you know, have not done well commercially.
Right.
You know, they're more likely to take chances. For example, several years back, Henry David Hwang, who wrote Les Mis, he was given permission to rewrite the book to Flower Drum and update it.
Mm-hmm.
And have a new voice, a modern voice, update the book. So that's a sort of, you know, risky thing that, you know, you would allow. Normally, you'd be very protective over, you know, anybody making a request to change a lyric or a word that was written by Oscar fucking Hammerstein. You know, first reaction is, who the hell do you think you are?
Right, right.
And what's your reasoning? Now, right. I think that speaks more like how I would be.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, more often than not, you know, if someone has a good reason, they need to shorten the show, there's a pragmatic reason, and it's a tasteful request, you know, might be granted to try, you know, try stuff out.
Sure.
One request was, I can't remember what show it was, but they wanted to set it in an insane asylum.
Mm.
I don't know, like Sound of Music, you know, set in an insane asylum, mm-hmm. or something like outrageous. And that, they, you know, they were like, no. No.
Right.
If it was public domain, we, you know, that's, we would have that.
Right.
You know? I don't know how many people would have seen it. You know, I don't know how much damage a crazy idea like that could do. I mean, that's the other side. In any case,
yeah,
it's kind of nice that, you know, that we had the ability to say no.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, look, you know, this is part of the tradition of theater and part of the tradition of art in general, is particularly works that are part of your consciousness, you know, that they, you know, people want to do derivative works,
right.
You know, and sometimes derivative works are brilliant and sometimes they're hideous.
Yeah.
It's just as true of, you know, how many derivatives of Shakespeare have there been? Some of which are fantastic and some are hideous.
Right. And I think it bears mentioning, to play devil's advocate to myself, that that Shakespeare's works have not been diminished by any and all of that. So there's that side.
No, and it isn't. I think that there's, again, there is this difference between that and sort of the, you know, what sort of the copyleft, as we call them, are pushing for, which is just a kind of total free for all.
Exactly. It's the loss of control. It's I feel like, you know, I'm more at the sidelines. However, with my new thing, I'll segue into.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Highland Farm.
Yes, I wanted to ask about the Highland Farm. What is that?
Yeah, I mean, in the context of our current conversation, it's an opportunity for me to take some control back. Mm. Highland Farm is where Oscar and Dorothy, my grandmother, moved with my dad when he was 10, from Long Island, from Great Neck, to Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. But that's where he lived, worked, and died during the most productive time of his career. They moved there in 1940. He died in 1960. In 1941, the partnership with Richard Rogers was formed, I believe, at Highland Farm. Mm-hmm. And today, it's a bed and breakfast, and the barn has holes in the roof and is deteriorating, and the bed and breakfast will not pay. You know, there's not, it doesn't generate enough money to pay to keep up the house, which is, was built in like the 1850s. And right. I would like to preserve it.
Uh huh.
It's a place that matters to me, and it right. matters to a lot of people. And so, you know, the idea is to turn the house into a house museum. And we want to turn the museum, the barn into a theater.
Uh-huh.
And this, the stage in my, you know, conceptually is just a display case for Oscar's work.
Right.
Film versions of his shows and stage versions of his shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what's an Oscar Hammerstein museum? I mean, if it was a Picasso house museum, wouldn't you want to have some of his paintings on the
Probably,
walls?
Probably, yeah.
You know, in that same vein, you know, hey, and we got that barn right there, man.
Hey, kids, we have a barn. Let's put on a show.
Yeah, let's put on a show. So, yeah, so so that's and from a personal, you know, for in terms of, like, the loss of, you know, the loss of the having a stake in the copyrights, even if I never had a say, you know, about anything that, any decisions that were made, you know, now I do have a big say in decisions that are made, regarding the place that will honor him.
That sounds like a great project, Will, and I wish you luck with it. And I want to thank you for talking to me today. My guest has been William Hammerstein, grandson of Oscar Hammerstein II. And this is the Illusion of More podcast. Thank you for listening.